Good morning to everybody. Boker Tov. Hope people are keeping warm. Hope people are keeping well. Nice to see everybody. We are going to have a very, I think, interesting roller coaster ride share today. Something a little bit unusual. Maybe it's always something a little bit unusual, but today for sure. I'd like to start with a dedication and sponsorship. We're very grateful always to receive your sponsorship. Thank you for that. This is particularly connected to me and my family, and I'd like to read it out. The Shir is sponsored by Stanley and Donna Dalnikoff. For a Mazel Tov and congratulations to Rabbi Anthony and Sarah Manning on the birth of their granddaughter, Meital Abigail, to Asher and Leah Manning. So that, of course, is us. And thank you very, very much, Stanley and Donna. Thank you very much. Stanley and Donna were, it was a wonderful opportunity to meet them. They're very good friends with our Machatonim, Leah's parents. And when Asher and Leah met and got married a couple of years ago, meeting Stanley and Donna were one of the great perks of that relationship. So thank you to Stanley and Donna for the Mazel Tov and for the sponsorship. I did actually know just about 10
Mazel Tov.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Just a short time before the last week's share, we actually knew about our new granddaughter, but I was under strict instructions not to tell anybody at the time, so I'm afraid I couldn't tell you last week. But now, Baruch Hashem, the news is out there. Thank you for your good wishes. Really, really grateful to everybody. So I've been asked to just share the sheets on the chat just one more time. So I will do that. I'm very happy to do that in case anyone didn't get them before. I hope that you see them now. You should see them now. Okay, fine. I would also mention, like I normally do, that if anybody wants the sheets in advance, then please send their details to David Hochhauser, who you can find him on the chat here, OU Israel. He'll put you on the mailing list. And also, I apologize in advance if there are any technical problems. Hopefully there won't be. But if there are, please bear with me. We'll be back with you as soon as we can. Okay, we had a little break last week for Hanukkah issues, but now we are back into this second part of the two-part series. Okay, so 2 weeks ago we had part one, where we looked at some fairly unusual material in the sense that it's not often discussed, about the halachic boundaries and parameters to sexual relations outside marriage. And we saw there, and I summarized at the beginning of this week's sheet, that there are three basic approaches. The Rambam, Maimonides, is the most restrictive. He basically says that any sexual relationship outside marriage is a prohibition of kadesha. The Torah says you're not allowed to give your daughter over or yourself over to be a kadesha or a kadesh. Says the Rambam, that is basically any sexual relationship outside marriage. There is a debate. Does the Rambam really mean any, even a monogamous long-term relationship? Okay, so the last session, part one, we looked a couple of weeks ago at this issue, and we said that there were basically three opinions. The Rambam's opinion was that any relationship outside marriage is a prohibition, kadesha. And there was a debate as to whether that means really any relationship. What about a long-term monogamous relationship? And there was a difference of view on that as well. The Raivad took the view that no, only a casual relationship was a problem of kadesha, whereas a long-term monogamous relationship was pilegesh. And everybody knows, says the Raivad, that pilegesh is something that the Torah permits. We'll get to that today. And the Ramban, who we'll see, is the most permissive on the issue of pilegesh. In practice, the Raivad really isn't. The Ramban says, really, the kadesha issue is between two people who are anyway prohibited to be with each other, to get married to each other. But we looked at all that in detail in part one, these three different approaches. Today, I want to get into this question of pilegesh in much more detail. And hopefully really set this out in a way which is structured and helpful to people. This is a very interesting topic for a few reasons. Hopefully you can see my shared screen there. It's interesting because the subject matter is interesting. It's controversial. People talk about this and often, as is often the case, don't know what they're talking about. It's interesting because there's a halachic structure, which I think we'll really appreciate. It's interesting because it throws up questions and insights into history that we sometimes don't think about, the way that the sexual morality of different Jewish societies worked over the last thousand or years or so. And it's interesting because some of the most colorful figures in Jewish history are going to be caught up before us over the course of today's shiur. So all sorts of reasons, Be'ezrat Hashem, to really look forward to what we're going to discuss over the next 45, 50 minutes. What is a pilegesh? So the word pilegesh appears many times in Tanakh. If you look in the sheet here, some understand it as a loan word connected to the ancient Greek palakis. Palakis is a Greek word for a concubine. It could be pilegesh is connected with that. Obviously, the word predates Greek because it's in the Chumash itself. Others relate to it as a compound word. Look at number one. This is quite a commonly quoted idea. Lashon pilegesh, the word pilegesh, says the Sisei Chachamim here, is plag isha. Plag isha. A partial wife. Plag means partial or a half or a part. Wife. Kloimah, the shchiva v'lo lepri arivia. And that's interesting. He says, pelegesh is often a wife who is there more for a sexual relationship than to build a family. Now we'll see that that's not necessarily the case. And one of the suggestions for the use of pelegesh over time has been to build a family as well. But that's just one idea. And the other view is brought by the Raivad, which again leads to the more kind of sexual nature of the connection with pelegesh. Look at this important Rambam and Raivad in number two. The Rambam, we saw this last time, but this is an important foundational source for our topic. Says the Rambam in Hilchos Ishus at the beginning of the first chapter, Halacha Dal. Kodem Matan Torah Haya Adam Pogeya Isha Bashuk. Before Matan Torah, it was possible for a man and a woman to meet up somewhere publicly, im ratzahu vehi, if they were consensual about their relationship. Noisin laschara, he gives her whatever she wants in order to connect with him, or boil, and then they can have a relationship. Boil or ta, al ein derech v'holech. In public, it could be a public affair. He's allowed to do that, she's allowed to do that. That's before Matan Torah. V'zoihi anikret kadesha. That says the Rambam is kadesha. And that's what's now prohibited. Because now, after Matan Torah, in order to have a relationship between a man and a woman, you need a marriage. Marriage is required. Says the Raivad, I don't agree. Amar Avram, Ein Kadesha Ela Mezumenet. No, that's not Kadesha. Kadesha is not a long-term monogamous relationship. Kadesha is a woman who is given over to promiscuity. V'hi mufkeret l'chol adam, to any person. Aval hamayuchedet atzmo le'ish echad, but a man and a woman who have a long-term monogamous relationship, Ein ba lo malchus v'lo iser, love, that's not a Torah prohibition. V'hi pilegesh haketuba. That is what pilegesh is. An option, an alternative to marriage. Now we'll see what the difference is between the two in a minute. Ubali alashon darshim pilegesh, and he gives another derivation of the word pilegesh. It's a metathesis. It's a mila hafucha. It's a word in which the letters have been flipped around. Murkevet by P shegel. It relates to the word mashagel, the omed lefrakim le mashagel, which again means a sexual relationship. And he says that's what the word pilegesh means. A woman with whom a man and the woman have made an arrangement, which is basically sexual but monogamous in nature. And then he adds, mashameshes et abayit, and she really acts as a maid, is the truth. Upamin lemishkav, and sometimes, he's able to, or they sleep with each other, but she's really a subordinate rank. And we'll talk about this. One of the reasons that the Beforshim ask the question, is pelegesh allowed today? One of the answers to this is no, because it's deeply demeaning to women in the modern day context. And we'll talk about how the modern discussion of that pans out. But really, a pelegesh has an element of being a shifcha as well, of being a maid, and we'll see that comes up clearly in the Chumash. By the way, just in parentheses, this issue of metathesis, where words flip their consonants, sometimes even vowels around in the middle, this is common, but it happens in Hebrew. I'm sure you know that the word keves and the word kesev both mean sheep, even though the words have been flipped around. Similarly, the words simla and silma are both mean a dress. And actually, the Mishnah talks about a malzeg, which you and I know as a mazleg, a fork. And this happens in other times as well. It actually happens in English as well. I brought you some examples from Greek, where the word circus comes from krikus. But that's not for now. That gets us off into linguistics in a way which I'm not an expert, and I don't want to get too into that. But it could be that pelegesh is related to that metathesis as well. Fine. Let's talk about Tanakh. There are many Pilagshem in Tanakh. In Sefer Bereishis, this is a bit of a theme. Think about Avraham Avinu has Pilagshem, plural, identified as Hagar and Keturah, but it's not entirely clear, if you look at the Meforshem, which is an Isha and which is a Pelegesh. More about that, but not now. Bilhah is referred to as Pelegesh of Yaakov. Is that true of Zilpah? It doesn't say, but Bilhah certainly. Timnah is the Pelegesh of Eliphaz, and they between them have little Amalek, which obviously causes a lot of trouble. Maybe that's relevant more in a minute. Keturah, we mentioned, is the Pelegesh of Avraham. Kalev, little known to some, if you look in Divrei Hayamim, has two Pelagshim, Epha and Ma'acha, who give him lots of children. But then after Bereishis in Tanakh, in Chumash, we never hear the word Pelagshim again. Until later in Tanakh, we see it much more in the context of the kings. Gidon, who is not a king, but he's kind of a pre-king, has a Pelegesh, it says there in Shoftim, the mother of Avimelech. The narrative, of course, of the Pelegesh of Giva, which is a horrible and very striking narrative, which I'm not getting into now, but that obviously is a big issue of Pelegesh. Shaul has, as a king, has a Pelegesh. Ritzpah, more about her soon. David is referred to as taking multiple Pelagshim. Many of David's Pelagshim, 10 of them are, of course, taken by Avshalom. That's a very big episode in terms of the Malchut and who is the legitimate king. Avshalom sleeps with them. David then takes them back, but will not sleep with them again. Shlomo has 300 Pelagshim, along with his 700 wives, probably a little bit over the top for most people, but it wasn't so good for Shlomo either. Rechavam has 60 Pelagshim as well as 18 wives, and then Ahasuerus has multiple Pelagshim as well. So we see this in Tanakh a lot. Remarkably, we don't see anyone, we'll see one exception to that possibly, later after Tanakh having Pelagshim. Why does no one in Chazal, why doesn't none of the Tanaim and none of the Amoraim, why do we not see that they have wives and Pelagshim? Now we'll see Rabbi Yaakov Emden suggest that they do, but almost nobody else thinks that. What happens to Pelagshim? And one of the things that we see from Pelagshim is, number one, they seem to be connected with leaders, or certainly with kings. The line between Pelegesh and Isha is sometimes a blurred one. Usually, and this is a point made by many of the modern day commentators, a Pelegesh was someone that a man connected with in addition to his wife. The word Pelegesh in modern Hebrew is used usually associated with the similar to the word mistress, which is not really what it means here, but a Pelegesh was an arrangement which was permanent, usually, where a man had a wife and he had a Pelegesh, and it didn't therefore undermine in that sense the institution of marriage. In the modern day context, when people discuss this, it usually is in a way which undermines marriage in some way, but back in the day, it did not. And importantly, almost every time Pelegesh is mentioned, there is a negativity to it. There is something which is either explicitly or implicitly negative. Think about the following: the tensions between Hagar and Sarah, the tensions with the wives of Yaakov, and then Reuven and Bilhah, how that all plays out. Amalek as the product of a Pelegesh, the Pelegesh of Giva, one of the most horrific stories in Tanakh. Ishbosheth and Avner on Shaul's Pelegesh, Avshalom on David's Pelegshim, Shlomo's multiple wives, etc. It's not something which the Chumash and the Tanakh is painting as positive. Like any multiple wife arrangement is usually something associated with stress and tension. And of course, multiple mothers-in-law, which also will raise people's eyebrows as a potential downside to the whole process. But let's leave that aside for now. Three, Chazal clearly points out that the Pelegesh is often also much more like a Shifcha. Like I mentioned before, looking at number three, Lavan, says the Midrash, Lakach et shtei shfrotav. He took his two maidservants, but not on the shtei benotav, and he gave them to his two daughters, Zilpah to Leah, Bilhah to Rachel. Ah, says the Midrash, v'chi shifchotav hayu, were they his maidservants? V'halo benotav hayu, they were also his daughters. There is a Midrashic tradition that Bilhah and Zilpah were also the daughters of Lavan. So they were four sisters, says the Midrash. They were daughters of Lavan from a Pelegesh, Nikru Shvachot, and therefore they were called servants because the children from a Pelegesh, they're not Mamzerim. It's interesting, Josephus relates to the children of the Pelegesh as Mamzerim, but that is actually halachically not the case, but they are in some sense of a lower status, and you see that with Lavan, Bilhah, Zilpah, etc., etc. Now, let's get into the main analysis here. How do Chazal on a halachic level relate to Pelagship? Because this has been raised in the modern day context as a suggestion by some, rejected by almost all, as, well, why can't we have Pelagship today? Maybe this would be a solution to certain societal problems, has been suggested. We'll analyze that at the end. So we have to understand, what is the halachic issue with Pelagshem? Are you allowed or are you not allowed? How does that work? And in fact, we'll see that there is a fundamental machlokas as to what a Pelagish is between the Yerushalmi and the Bavli. Let's have a look at that now, because that will really open it all up. The Yerushalmi says the following, number four, Eizo hi isha, the Eizo hi Pelagish. What is a wife and what is a Pelagish? Rabbi Meir says the following, Isha yesh la ketuba. So a wife has a financial settlement. A Pelegesh ain la ketuba, whereas a Pelegesh has no financial settlement. So that's the difference, as Rabbi Meir, the ketuba. Rabbi Yehuda says, achad zo va achad zo yesh la ketuba. They both have a ketuba, they both have a financial settlement, but isha yesh la ketuba va tzanai ketuba, and isha, a wife, has a super duper ketuba with all the trimmings. The tzanai ketuba are the tosefes ketuba, and the extra rights that the wife has in a standard ketuba now, whereas Pelegesh yesh la ketuba va ain not tzanai ketuba. She has a standard 100/200 zuz ketuba, but she doesn't have any of the trimmings. Now, what's important here, critical here, is the Yerushalmi's position appears to be that everybody agrees that the Pelegesh has kiddushin, meaning you can't just make an informal arrangement with a Pelegesh according to the Yerushalmi. You have to actually get married. The difference between a Pelegesh and a wife is not whether you marry her. You have to marry any woman. But the difference is financial and pure and simple. And the machlokas in the Gemara is what level of financial. Either a Pelegesh has no ksuba at all, or a Pelegesh has a lower level ksuba. But everyone agrees that she gets kiddushin. Now, if that's the case, then there is very little difference between a Pelegesh and a wife in practical terms. A Pelegesh will also require a get in order to separate, okay, according to the Yerushalmi. And there is evidence for this from various different places. The Yerushalmi itself talks about Ritzpah. Ritzpah is the Pelegesh of Sha'ul, and it refers to her as Sha'ul's wife, and it uses her as an example of, are you allowed to marry your father-in-law's wife? In this case, obviously not your mother-in-law, and it brings that as an example, clearly assuming that Ritzpah was a full-blown, a complete wife of Sha'ul, not just a woman with no kiddushin. Similarly, the Midrash picks up quite famously on the issue of Reuven and Bilhah. As you probably remember from the whole Parshanut there is a debate as what did Reuven do with Bilhah. It says that he slept with her. Did he really? Could he have done that? Or did he move the beds around? There's a whole Midrashic debate. Look in number six, Rabbi Shimon ben Gibli Gamliel Omer, Mutzal haya Reuven me'oisachay. Don't think for a second that Reuven did what it sounds like he did and slept with Bilhah. Lo nizkak lo isamasa. He wasn't responsible for that. Could somebody, as the head of the Shvatim, stand at Har Eva later on and say, cursed is he who sleeps with his father's wife? Can you imagine that Reuben could have done that? Now, leaving aside the Parshanut as to whether it sounds like Reuben did this or Reuben did that, the assumption of this Midrash is that the Bilhah was a full wife of Yaakov, even though it says that she's a Pelegesh, she's an Ashes. And therefore, leaving aside the question, of course, as to whether you can really learn halacha from Midrash, and I brought you in the footnotes there a share that we had on this a year or two ago, are you allowed to learn halacha from a gadita? Yes or no? When? Parameters? That's one question. But it seems clear from the Yerushalmi that a Pelegesh is almost like a regular wife, the difference being purely financial. Okay, that's the Yerushalmi's position. The Bavli takes a different position. Look in number seven. My nashim umay pilagshim, says the Gemara in Sanhedrin. what is the difference between wives and Pelagshim? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, Nashim b'ksuva b'kiddushin. Wives have ktuva and kiddushin. Pelagshim b'loy ksuva b'loy kiddushin. Very different to the Yerushalmi. According to the Bavli, a Pelagish has no ktuva, no financial settlement, and no kiddushin. No kiddushin at all. It's a monogamous but informal relationship. You don't need a ceremony to make it. You don't need a get to end it. Okay, if that's the case, Pelagish is a whole different thing than we thought before. It's much easier to get in. It's much easier to leave. The problem is that Rashi doesn't seem to have this girsa in our Gemara. Rashi on the Chumash, when he quotes the Gemara, he quotes it like the Yerushalmi. This is one of the things that makes this a complicated sugya. Look at Rashi for a second. When Rashi quotes the Gemara, Nashin b'ksuva, Pelagshin b'loiksuva, okay, could I read him a Sanhedrin? He quotes it as a financial difference rather than as a kiddushin difference, which raises a question as to what the Bavli really says and what the Bavli, if you like, really means. And therefore, all of this really indicates a certain level of lack of clarity as to whether a Pelagish really does need kiddushin or doesn't need kiddushin. Of course, this might be one of the reasons, it's an interesting point, why we don't see Pelagshim in Chazal. Don't forget, Chazal were very keen to stress the need to give a full financial security package to a wife. Okay. Therefore, Pelagish would have undermined what Chazal were trying to do in terms of promote and secure the status of the woman in a marriage. And therefore, it seems pretty obvious why Pelagshim were far less popular, if at all, in the time of Chazal. It would have undermined what they were doing with the Ksuba and with the status of a woman in marriage. And also, when it comes to a king, of course, it's a completely different matter. A wife has no financial insecurity when it comes to being the wife of a king, so maybe Pelagish is fine. Also, she really has no consent. The king summons a woman to be his Pelagish, and of course, everything about marriage is completely the opposite. It has to be completely consensual. By the way, interestingly, in parentheses, one of the discussions about David and Bathsheba goes to the issue of consent and a king. One of the big halachic questions with David and Bathsheba is, how could David have had a relationship with Bathsheba when she was married to Uriah Achiti? Surely we know that if somebody has a relationship with a woman who is married, they may never continue that relationship afterwards. And yet Bathsheba and David got married properly and had Shlomo HaMelech. And one of the big conundrums halachically is, how could that possibly be the case? So you can either answer and say, well, Bathsheba was not really married to Uriah, which of course is part of the Parsha Nod there, they had a divorce, Al Tanai, etc. Or you can say, which Chazal say elsewhere, that actually when the king summoned Bathsheba, that was much more of a non-consensual arrangement. It wasn't obviously a violent arrangement, but what choice does a woman have when the king says to come? Look from Megillat Esther. And therefore, it's a whole different arrangement with Pelagish and a king than later on when, as I said, Chazal are trying to bolster and secure the relationship of a woman in marriage and not in any way to undermine it. And in fact, Chazal have a negative attitude generally towards Pelagish. If you look in number 9, a very informative midrash, the Rabbanon Amri, the rabbi said as follows, Lemelech Shehayalo Ishu Pelagesh. Let's give a marshal. A king had a wife and a Pelagesh. Kishehu Holech Etzel Ishtar, when he wants to be with his wife, Hu Holech Befar Hesia, he can do so publicly. Kishehu Holech Etzel Shibchasai, okay, when he wants to be with his maidservant, again, the Pelagesh is like a Shibcha, Holech Bematmoniut. He goes in a secretive way, in a furtive way. And he compares this to God appearing to the prophets of the Jewish people openly and in a very proud way by day, Moshe Rabbeinu, etc., as opposed to Bilam and Lavan, which is much more furtive by night. Etc. And therefore, it's clear that the attitude of Chazal to Pelagish is negative. It's more like a maidservant. It's furtive, etc. How does that translate into the halacha? What do we do with that? So there are actually 4 approaches in the Rishonim. I just want to go through each of them clearly, and we'll see where that leaves us in terms of the halacha lemaisa. Is it okay or is it not okay? Is it, practically speaking, ever acceptable for a man and a woman to enter into a pelagish arrangement today? So there are 4 approaches. Approach number 1, following the Yerushalmi, is that a pelagish requires kiddushin. So it's effectively the same as a wife. She needs a get to leave, she needs kiddushin to enter. Number 10, Rashi clearly says this, we saw, nashim b'ksuva pilagshim shaloi b'ksuva, and Rashi seems to make it very clear that, a bit like we saw in the Rambam, any relationship between man and woman, as far as he's concerned, has to be the kiddushin. Has to be with kiddushin. There is no such thing as a relationship, even monogamous, even long-term, which doesn't have kiddushin. He says this on the mitzvah of Kadesh and Kadesha. Any relationship between a man and a woman has to be fully with kiddushin. And that is the position of Rav Trigon, of the Rivash, also of the Vilna Gaon later. Now, according to that, effectively, a pelegish is just the same as a regular wife, almost, maybe apart from the financial issues, and has almost no relevance today. The second approach is, no, a pelegish does not require kiddushin, but she's not allowed to a regular person. Have a look at this. Quite famous Rambam here. The Rambam jumps in number 12 and says, "V'chein lokeach mikol." This is the king. The king can take mikol gvul Yisrael nashim upilagshim. The king can take, again, whether she likes it or not, wives and concubines. Nashim b'ktuba uvikishin. Wives have ksuba and kiddushin. Upilagshim b'loy ksuba b'loy kiddushin. Like the Bavli, like the Pashtus of the Bavli. Ella b'yichud bilvad. The king just has to be together with the pelagesh. And then he makes be with her. Aval, and he comes up with a halacha, and the question is, where does he get this from? Hahedyet asur b'pilegish. A regular commoner is not allowed to take a pilegish ever. Ela ba'ama ivriya, there's a case of an amar ivriya, which doesn't apply today at all, bilvad achayud, after she's been designated for the family. So, according to the Rambam, there is no possibility ever of taking a pilegish other than for a king. And the king can use his pilagshim, tabachot as cooks, ofot as bakers, rikachot as perfumers, shenerman he brings from Shmuel. So you see again that the status of the pilagish was a lower status in the king's palace, but as far as a Raman is concerned, there is no pilagish other than from a king. Rabbeinu Yonah takes his position, the Rashba, the Meiri. One of the questions, of course, on this is, well, what about all these other people in Tanakh that have pilagshim? Avram, Yaakov, Gidon, Kalev, etc., the pilagish of Giva, what about them? They're not kings. So you could answer, well, this was before there was a king, so that rule didn't apply. Or you could say that these people had a higher level status that's a bit more kvetched, if you like. Maybe it works for Avram and Yaakov, but does it work for the pilagish of Giva? We'll see that the Ramban asks this on the Rambam. But that's very famously the Rambam's position. Pelegesh is mutar without kiddushin, but only for a king. That's the second position. The third position is Pelegesh is in theory permitted for anybody without kiddushin, but there's a rabbinic prohibition. Why would this be? Let's have a look here at two important sources. Number 13, Rav Meir Abu Lafia in the Middle Ages. He's asked the question, and we'll see right now, this was a halacha lemaisa question in Spain. Why? Because unlike the society that we have today, and unlike Ashkenazi society there, even then, in Spanish society, it was quite common for Jewish married men to take pilagshim. Either Jewish women or non-Jewish women, Christian women, Muslim women. And this was a source of great friction in the rabbinic establishment as to whether this was in any way justifiable, but it was a reality that pilagshim were part of the social structure of the Golden Age of Spain. So what we're going to see now is two responses from the Spanish poskim as to how to deal with that. So Rav Meir Abu Lafia says as follows, number 13. Well, my pilagshim or my nashim, what is the difference between women who are wives and pelagshim? I'm a Rav Yehuda, I'm a Rav, nashim b'ksuv v'kiddushin, pelagshim b'loy ksuv v'loy kiddushin. Like the Bavli, a pelagish does not require kiddushin. The afa gav the kiddushin d'oraisa, isn't there a mitzvah to marry? D'chsiv ki yikach ish isha, and we saw the Rambam holds that anyone who doesn't marry is in breach of that mitzvah if they have a relationship. Ein kicha ele b'kesef, and the only way to get married is with kesef, a ring, etc. Who had in a shtar or a bia or a relationship for the sake of marriage or a document for marriage, etc. Hani mili l'sham yeishis. That's only when a person wants to actually have a full status wife. L'chayva b'mezonaseha, to be responsible for her financially. Ula asra b'kravaseha, to be prohibited to her relations in incest. Ula asra b'kravasav, and her to his relations. Ula chayva le'emishum eishis ish, and that she would be a married woman for the purposes of adultery. V'shad dvarim atzurim be'ishus. Aval, but, says Rav Meir Rebelafia, im ratza liyached isha b'loik suvah b'loik kiddushin, if a man wanted to take a partner without suvah, without kiddushin, but on a monogamous long-term basis, midoraisa shapir, that's okay on a Torah level, shapir dami, it's fine. V'rabbanon hu de gazar, but the rabbis made a gezerah, kidei shaloi yeh b'nois Yisrael hefka, because it's completely inappropriate for Jewish women to be treated in this way. Meaning, even if it's technically, halachically permitted on a Torah level, it's the rabbi said, that's not the, and this is what I said before, when Chazal came along, they came to very much strengthen the position of a Jewish woman in society and in marriage, and therefore they said, any potential pelegish relationship is off, completely off, because it's an issur d'rabbanan. That's one approach. Intrinsically, it's also issur d'rabbanan. The Rosh gives a different reason, but you see here an insight into society in Spain. The Eretz Hazon, now the Rosh, just a bit of biographical background, the Rosh was most of his life in Germany, okay? And he escaped Germany. He was the student of the Maharam of Rottenberg who tried to escape and was imprisoned and died in prison. The Rosh saw the writing on the wall and got out of there with his son, the Tour, and they went to live in Spain. And the Rosh became the head of the community of Toledo. And he says as follows, the Eretz Hazot, where I now live, he writes, regilim lehityached im hapnuyot. Married men are often with single women. Asher itam babayit, they have them in the house as servants, as maids, as help, etc. V'davar mechu'aru, I think it's disgusting, he says, lahachzik hakol, and it's publicly done. V'pnuya meshameshes babayit, you can have a woman who comes to look after the house, babayit bebed ruvin, v'yatza kol shemit yachid yimah, and everybody knows that they're having a relationship. Im yicholim b'nei mishpachta, the shaila is, can her family object, limchot shelot ha'amod etzlo, and stop her from staying there? Ki hu pagam lahem shetiyeh pelagsho. Because it's a pagam, it's a family disgrace that this woman has become a pelegesh for a man in Spain. You see how this was part of the society. Look what he says here. Tshuva. Pnuya meshameshes b'beit Reuven. This woman who acts as a servant in Reuven's house. The yatzakala, the loy pasik shemit yachidema, and there's a clear, everybody knows that they have an ongoing relationship. Loy mi boy b'nei mishpachta shecholin lechot. Not only can her family object, because it's a family disgrace that their daughter is in the home here as a pelagesh, ela beit din hayakofen atzala hoitzi mebesa, because, but the beit din can even force him, even if the family doesn't care. The beis din cares. Why? And look, he gives another reason. Kidava yadua, because it's absolutely clear, it's well known, shehibusha bosha litbol, she will be embarrassed to go to the mikvah, the nimsa shebol nida, and she'll end up having relationships with him when she's in nida. A new reason we didn't see before. And the Radvaz, quotes this as the drabanon, that a side issue apart from the disgrace to the status of the woman, which is unacceptable, says the Rosh, we have a side issue, which is if a woman is in a pelegish arrangement, will she be embarrassed to use the mikveh? Will she get stopped by the mikveh lady? Will she be, you know, just not willing to discuss this because of the scandal involved? In which case, there's a secondary concern that we're not going to allow pelegish because she will not use the mikveh. And that's a separate issue. Interesting, does that translate into a modern day scenario? Are there situations, we talked about this last week, with single women using the mikveh? Is there going to be a concern they're not going to go because they're embarrassed, etc., that they get asked? But this clearly was one of the reasons that Rishonim gave to prohibit, practically speaking, the institution of pelegish. The fourth position was the Ramban, and this is where it gets the intrigue really gets going. The Ramban disagrees with Rashi and says and takes the majority position that a pelegish does not require kiddushin, she does not require ksuba, and she does not require kiddushin. Somebody asked a question here, would she be embarrassed if everyone had a pelegish? We'll see soon. That's one of the arguments that is used here. But the Ramban wrote a tshuva on this, and this tshuva became very famous as what people quote as the tshuva which permits pelagshim. We'll see if it really does or if it really doesn't in a minute. But look with me, please, in number 17. Let's have a look at this in some detail. Says the Ramban as follows. The Ramban is also in Spain, in the golden age of Spain. And as we said, this was a societal reality. The people had this arrangement. The others we saw were very negative. But look at what he says. He writes a tshuva to Rabbeinu Yonah, his student, who was against Bilakshim. I've received your request, your instruction to me to answer about the issue of Pelagish. And you want my opinion, he says, in a real way, not just in a theoretical sense. Let's see what he says. Lo yadati b'ma yistabku ba. I don't understand why there is even a question. Devadai muteret hi. I think it's absolutely clear that Pelagish is mutter. Kevan sheyach de latzmo, as long as it's monogamous, as long as it's long term. Shelo nesra isha b'znuti b'znuti Israel. A woman is only prohibited in immorality, a man and a woman, elam in midrash shel Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, because of the midrash we saw last week of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, that Nin said, ach nose achoto v'av nose bito, that there'll be mamzerim, people will not know who is related to who if there's an immorality in society. That's what it means when it says the land will be full of immorality. But when she comes into his house, and everybody knows it's a long-term relationship. V'hi miyuchedet, she is with him only. V'yadu'ua, and it's known, and it's publicly known that she's with him. V'neha nikrem al-shamo, then it'll be his children. And there'll be no problem. Umuteret, it should be fine. Shehari David nasa'ita, we see David had pelagshim. V'loi huske because of v'loi b'gemara hefrish b'melech lehejet. And he says, and I challenge you to find any reference in the Chumash or in Tanakh or in Chazal to a difference between kings and non-kings. He rejects that idea that we saw in the Rambam. Then he brings proofs that other people who were not kings had Pilagshim, and I'm going to skip these few lines because we talked about this, and he says, like, how could that be? Maybe they were like kings, but the Pilagish Begivah clearly was a regular person, and he clearly had a Pilagish. So where did you get this idea that's an issue? Shema Tomer, line 10 here. Shema Tomer, maybe you'll argue mina Torah hi muteres, that it's permitted on a Torah level. Umudivrehem hu degazor, like we just saw this other opinion, on a rabbinic level it's prohibited. So then he says, ki eze makam huskru gezeira bo b'talmud. Where does it say that? You can't just make stuff up. Where does it say that in the Gemara? It doesn't say anywhere a rabbinic prohibition. Ah, we saw the Rosh thinks there is, and the Ramah, the Yad Ramah thinks there is. He says, where is that? The Ezer based in Nuale. Tell me which based in did this. The Ezer's man Nishna Mishnazor. When was this said? He's very, clear that this is not halachically prohibited. Yes, if you want to marry a wife, so that she'll be a full wife. Knu yola, and completely related to him. The yarsha, to inherit from her, litamila, that a kohen can't be, the kohen's allowed to be matami for her, etc. Then amratari yikalish viyachnis l'chuppah, then you have to have a chuppah, kiddushin, vivarech birkas achasanim, and yin sheva brochas basara, and the whole shebang. Ha'ilu ratza shitiya lo pelegesh, but if he wants to have a pelegesh, Shaloite Knuyala, which is not a full wife, everything about this tshuva is indicating that the Rabban says it's permitted. And then he talks about the Rambam. He clearly has a slightly different wording in the Rambam because he says, I don't see why the Rambam has a problem with this either. Our Rambam clearly reads in a way which Pelegish is a major problem for a commoner. But he seems to be permissive. But then there's a line thrown in at the end. And here's where the intrigue really kicks off. The Ata Rabbeinu, and then he says to Rabbeinu Yonah, but you, my rabbi, Hashem Yichayecha, God should help you live, but Makamcha Tazhiram, where you live, tell them not to do it. Mina Pilegesh, tell them never to have Pilegeshim. She'im Yadu HaHetzi, because if they know that I give it a Heta, Yiznu V'yifritzu V'yivo Aleihem B'nidosam. There will be preachers, there will be immorality, people will not go to the mikveh, it will all be a disaster. So the both the Meforshim and the academics ask the question, is that line really coming from the Ramban? Or was that put in later by some zealous scribe, maybe Rabbeinu Yonah himself? Everything about the tshuva of the Ramban indicates that he was he permitted Pilagship. And then all of a sudden there's a line out of nowhere that says, but of course you shouldn't do it, and it's going to lead to problems and preachers, etc. There's a big question mark on that. Most of the later Achronim assume that this was the Ramban's line, and therefore the Ramban retracted and said, in practice, don't do it. Others said no. They don't think that was the Ramban, that was other people, and the Ramban is known in some circles, if you like, as the Matir, the one who says that effectively Pelegesh is acceptable. Now, all of this was in Spain. Don't forget that the Spanish didn't have the Chayim of Rabbeinu Gershom. The Ashkenazim, it's almost unheard of that they ever had Pelegeshim. There is a discussion as to whether, in theory, a Pelegesh would be a breach of the Chayrim of Rabbeinu Gershom, not to marry more than one wife. Some Mephoshim say would not be, because she's not really a wife. Other Mephoshim, I brought the Marashal, says it would be. But in practice, the Ashkenazim did not really get involved in this. The Sfaradim, of course, never really accepted fully the Chayrim of Rabbeinu Gershom, that you can't have more than one wife. And that's why a Sfaradi in Nexuba gives a promise to his wife that he won't go and accept another wife. Okay, that's written into the contract. I never promised that to my wife in my ksuba because I'm Ashkenazi and I have no choice in the matter. Of course, the Yemenites never really accepted it and they don't put it in their ksuba. So if you're planning to marry a Taimani, maybe just get that clear in advance as to whether they do or don't intend to look for another wife. In practice, the Yemenites don't do that either. And of course, it's illegal in Israel. Although they were Taimanim, they came from Yemen back in the day with multiple wives, which was accepted at the time. There is a rumor that people talk about that the Chayrim of Rabbeinu Gershom expired. I think that's really fake news. That's not really the case. Most Mephoshim understand that it was upheld by Ashkenazim, Dore Doris, although we'll see Rav Yaakov Emden, who seems to say something different on almost everything to anybody else. We'll see from him in a minute. Where does that leave us? Four opinions in the Rishonim. Either a Pelegesh requires Kiddushin effectively like a wife, or a Pelegesh is allowed in principle but only for a king, or a Pelegesh is allowed in principle for anybody but Asa Midrabbanan, or a Pelegesh is permitted. With that line at the end of the Ramban, does he really hold that in practice or not? The Shulchan Aruch basically says no. And the Ramah throws in a question. Let's leave the Torah for now because we're a bit short on time because of our technical glitch. Looking number 19, says the Shulchan Aruch as follows. Ein ha'isha nechshevet eshet ish ela alidei kiddushin. A woman may only be considered a married woman if she has proper kiddushin. She nitkad shikarui. She has to do it properly under a chuppah with a ring, etc. Well, she didn't have to have a ring, but that's the minhag now. Aval im ba'aleha derech znut. If a man were to have a non-married sexual relations with a woman, shaloi l'shem kiddushin, which is not intended for marriage specifically. Einot klum, it doesn't work. It is nothing. Marriage or nothing. And even if he turns, if they make an arrangement and they are what you might call a common law wife or a long-term effective marriage, but if they never do kiddushin, einot nechshevet ki'ishto, it doesn't work, he says. Only chuppah and kiddushin. Even if they're a lifetime partnership, without kiddushin, it's not allowed. Ela adaraba, on the contrary, kofim otala hotziyah mibeita. Any couple that wishes to live together without chuppah and kiddushin, the Beis Din will say, no, it's not acceptable. Marriage is the only way forward at this stage. Very, very clear in the Shulchan Aruch where he's coming from. Then the Ramah jumps in and says, I'll tell you why. The bevadai boshehi militbal. Ah, he gives this rabbinic drabonon reason that we're worried she's not going to go to the mikveh. Which we saw in the Rosh. But if we know for sure that she is with him permanently, she's not going to be embarrassed to go to the mikveh. There is a view that this is permitted. This is the Pelegesh, which is in the Torah. Interesting. He seems to quote a more permissive view. But there is another view that it's asur. And you even get Malchus. So the Shulchan Aruch says, no way. The Ramah says, it's a machlokas in different directions. Almost all of the Achronim, pretty much everyone with one exception, takes the view that Pelegesh is completely prohibited. Classic examples I brought you are Sephardi Achron and an Ashkenazi Achron. The Radvaz goes through and he says, look what he says, even the Ramban, who is the one everybody quotes as allowing Pilag Shem, Hamate, who is the one who permits it, Im Hayab is my name, if he lived in our times, people are so immoral in our times, he says, Hayagam hu oise. He would for sure have not allowed it today. Now, that's an interesting argument. Does the fact that there is more immorality in society make you less likely to allow Pilag Shem or more likely to allow Pilag Shem? It's an interesting question. He clearly takes the view that the Ramban, if he were living today, would never have said yes, because it's even worse today than it was then. We'll see Rav Yaakov Emden takes exactly the opposite opinion. The Yam Shel Shlomo takes the same view, that it's prohibited, number 21. But Doreinu, Shepashta Cherim, the Rabbeinu Gershom, he says, look, Rabbeinu Gershom, everybody follows this. It's widespread now. Shalolisa Isha al Ishtoi, Kalvachayme Pilagish Vishta. He learns Pilagish as a Kalvachayme. If you can't have two wives, all the more so you can't have a wife and a Pilagish. The law added, it's certainly no better than a wife. And he says, and even if there is no acceptance of the Cherem, it's prohibited today. Why? Im Tatil or Pilagish, if you allow Pilagshim, it'll all be over to Malay Haaretz Zima. It'll just lead to mass immorality. And that was the position of almost all, pretty much every single one of the Achronim. If you ask any Rav Shaila now, are you allowed to have a Pilagish? The answer will be absolutely not. Either for all of the reasons that we said, either it requires kiddushin, so it's the same as a wife, or it's prohibited to a non-king, or it's prohibited to Rabbanon. The one exception, and I just want to mention this now because it's a whole shir, and I actually gave a shir some years ago on this, Rav Yaakov Emden, who lived in Germany in the 18th century, he has a contrary opinion on almost everything you can possibly imagine. Rav Yaakov Emden is the most fascinating individual historically you could research. He had a lifelong campaign to put in Cherem both the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, who he thought was a Sabbatean, and also Rav Yonason Eibeschitz, who he thought was the arch Sabbatean, and he spent most of his life, Rav Yaakov Emden, trying to convince the world that Rav Yonason Eibeschitz was really completely off the scale and a Sabbatean and had to be excommunicated in every possible way. Whether he was right, whether he was wrong, who won the argument is an interesting question, but it was it rocked the Jewish community through the 18th century. Ironically, in the end, Rav Yaakov Emden, whose nemesis his whole life was the Rav Yonason Eibeschitz, Rav Yaakov Emden ended up dying on just before Shabbos, and the only place that they had in the cemetery to bury him was right next to Rav Yonason Eibeschitz, and they didn't have any time to wait. So there we are, you see, even enemies in life can become chavrusas in death. But Rav Yaakov Emden had a lot of interesting positions, all very countercultural. He was convinced that the Zohar was not actually fully from Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Now, you might turn around and say, well, you know, lots of academics say that. Shkoyach, lots of academics say that, but that's not a mainstream sort of Torah-focused position, or at least it wasn't, but he believed it very strongly. Not getting into the Zohar now, there's lots to say about the Zohar. He believed that the Mori Nebuchim couldn't possibly have been written by the Rambam. It must have been forged. Interesting. Now, that's definitely not the case. He was very sympathetic towards Jesus and the beginning of Christianity, which is very strange. And one of the things he came out on loud and clear is he felt that we had to bring back Pilag Shem. And I brought you on the sheet a summary of why he says that. Basically, you are dealing in his times with a post-Sabbatean society where there was, and the Frankists, If you know the whole story of the time, that one of the things that Shabtai Tzvi said is in order to bring the ultimate redemption, we have to sanctify even that which is prohibited. Matir Isurim. He started making a bracha that God wants us to now permit that which is prohibited. It's a whole messianic understanding of how halacha will change when Mashiach comes. I'm not getting into that now. But one of the things that was going on at the time of Rabbi Yaakov Emden was organized sexual immorality for religious reasons, adultery, prostitution, all sorts of strange things going on. Society did not look the way that sometimes people presented in the shtetl, in the haim, you know, in the good old days. Actually, the good old days in the time of Rabbi Yaakov Enden were fairly hair-raising. And he says, there's only one answer I can suggest to stop all this happening, is that pelagshim need to be brought back. If people get a pelegesh, it'll stop them committing adultery, it'll stop them sleeping with women who are nida, it'll stop them from sleeping with non-Jewish women, and he has an entire, you know, analysis. He goes through every single opinion that we've discussed, explains why he feels it's permitted, the Rambam, the Ramban, etc. You can analyze his tshuva. I brought you in the footnotes here a reference to the tshuva in English. It's about 25 pages long. It's not light reading, but if you print it off and read it, you will literally, if you have any hair left, your hair will stand on end by the end of it. Okay. I really recommend it. And he basically just says at the end, but of course, if you want to do this in practice, maybe best to check with another rabbi and not just to rely on me. And the answer, of course, is every other rabbi said, like, no, this is not happening. Rabbi Yaakov Emden is a colorful and interesting character. And just like we don't follow his positions on other things, I mean, halacha, we often do. But on Pelagshim, he was a voice in the wilderness, if you like. But he is often quoted as being one of the main achronim, pretty much the only one who permits it. Let's just finish off with a little bit on the modern discussion. I brought you on page 8. Over the last 25 years, a number of people have raised this in New York, in Israel. Maybe we should bring back Pelagshim for any number of reasons. One of the main discussion points has been Professor Tzvi Zohar from Bar Ilan wrote an article in 2006, which I've referenced in the footnotes. You can download his article. It's in Hebrew, and you can download the responses to that. But he wanted to claim that Pelagshim might be the answer to young people who identify as Orthodox but live with each other before they get married, to young men who are Orthodox, maybe even ultra-Orthodox, but are going to, you know, connecting with non-Jewish women, having relationships with them, to older single women who now have given up on the possibility of getting married. Maybe they would consider being a Pelagesh. And you can imagine the kind of backlash that this article received from Rav Yehuda Henkin, from Rav Shmuel Ariel, from Rabbanit Racheli Frankel, from Rabbanit Michal Tukuchinsky. And you can read the responses, halachic, hashkafic, moral, ethical, social, saying that you must be out of your mind. This is not an answer to these problems. Now, they are problems. And what the answer is a good question, which I'm not going to get into now. There may be other ways to, you know, to try and resolve these issues, but Pelagish is not the way. And therefore, really, that it's the end of the discussion. For halachic, hashkafic, ethical, and social reasons, Pelagish is basically out of the question. I would say that in 2012, a senior Sephardi mainstream rabbi suggested Pelagish as an answer to a woman, to a man whose wife was refusing to accept a get. And he needed to have a family, fulfill the mitzvah of Puravu, and he said maybe Pelagish was the answer. That also met with quite a lot of negativity. But I just wanted to finish with this reference in source number 22 to a famous piece by the Akedas Yitzchak. Again, we haven't got time really to go through it in detail, but I think it's an appropriate ending to the shir. The Akedas Yitzchak from Yitzchak Arama was asked the following, again, sociologically fascinating. In 15th century Spain, which was well after the Golden Age, meaning we talked about the Golden Age where the Jewish aristocracy had mistresses and pelagshim, etc. By the time of the Akedas Yitzchak, those days were long gone. The Jews were heavily persecuted, and the Christians brought in a new rule that any Jewish man that sleeps with a non-Jewish woman, including even a prostitute, a zonah, he will be burnt at the stake. And the Jewish community asked the Rabbonim, should we then now introduce a more organized system of Jewish prostitution in order to save people from being executed by the Christians? Amazing question. And there were people at the time in Spanish Jewish society that said, yes, we have to do this. People are not going to be able to prevent themselves doing this kind of thing, and therefore people are going to get executed. We have to organize an alternative. And Rav Yitzchak Arama said, no way. He goes through a whole analysis here, and he says, where individuals do things wrong, and he goes through different, even the most serious things, that is called an individual chet. That person is responsible in the eyes of God, in the eyes of the law, but the community is not sanctioning it. But once the community steps in and gives public sanction to something which is what they were suggesting here, he says that becomes a communal chet, and that's a completely different story. He compares it to the Pelagish of Givah. He says if the Beit Din had handed over those men responsible and not defended them, then they would have been individually responsible. But because the tribe of Binyamin wouldn't do that, so you ended up with a terrible civil war and all that followed from that. And therefore, he said, under no circumstances, this is often quoted, this Akedas Yitzchak on Chumash, when people are asked, should single women be advised to go to the mikveh, this Akedas Yitzchak is often brought as a reason why a Rav could never say yes to that, because it would be condoning publicly something which is a private aveira. That's not the only response that Rabbonim have on that issue. I'm not going there now. We talked about that last week. But it's an important, concluding point to that. So what is our conclusion? I think our conclusion is very clear. Pilagshim are fascinating in Tanakh, in Chumash, in later in Chazal, the analysis of how it works. But Lemaisa, Halacha Lemaisa, every Rav you would ever ask would say it was prohibited today, not just on halachic grounds, but I don't think anyone really feels that this would be a helpful addition to the moral fabric of society. Having said all of that, the problems that that Professor Zohar addressed and raised are actually problems. And they can't be ignored, and we have to think of solutions, not pelagish. So hopefully that was a slightly unusual analysis. I don't know whether it's the kind of thing that is talked about elsewhere, but we'll put it to the side now. We've had our two shirim on pelagish. What I'd like to do, Be'ezrat Hashem, next week, I'm not 100% sure I'll be able to have the time to prepare it, but I'd like to get into some discussion for the last installment, if you like, of our themes around Sefer Bereishis. I'd like to talk about Kvura. We've never talked about burial before. Yaakov Avinu is buried. He's embalmed. Yosef dies. He's embalmed. Let's talk maybe next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, a little bit about those issues. And then we'll move on to other areas. But for now, thank you again for being part of the share. Thank you for the sponsorship. Thank you for the kind wishes and the mazel tovs. Someone asked a question here. What's the status of a child born to a non-married Jewish woman? And the answer is there's no mamzeris there. There is no prohibition. There is a prohibition, but there's no stigma to the child. Okay, let's leave it there. Thank you very much for being on. Sorry we went over a few moments and for the glitches, but please God, we'll meet next week. Be well.